They are one of the largest recipients of NIH funding. Their scientists played a substantial role in developing more than half the cancer drugs approved by the FDA in the last 5 years. Dana-Farber Cancer Institute has been making one advanced cancer discovery after another for over 75 years. At Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, what we do here changes lives everywhere. Find out more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
Talkin' Trade.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning from American Public Media in Los Angeles. I'm Steve Chiatakis. In just a few hours, the Commerce Department will release the March figure for the trade deficit. It reached a 9-year low a couple of months ago in February, a sign that the worst of the global recession may be over. But that figure is expected to widen a bit. More from Marketplace's Dan Gretsch.
For years, the U.S. has bought more from the rest of the world than it sold. 6 months ago, that gap between exports and imports, the trade deficit, reached a record high of $60 billion a month. Today, the deficit is less than half that, because the global economy has tanked. Nigel Galt is chief U.S. economist for IHS Global Insight.
We've been looking for a trade deficit decline for a long time. We would have preferred that it would have happened through seeing exports grow faster than imports, rather than seeing exports and imports both declining, but imports declining more.
Galt says the U.S. economy is still too dependent on foreign goods.
There is a long-term rebalancing that's needed in the global economy. We need to see more spending in the rest of the world and more production growth in the U.S.
Galt says it's doubtful that can be achieved in the next few years. He predicts the trade deficit will widen again as the U.S. recovers more quickly than the rest of the world. I'm Dan Gretsch for Marketplace.
Over in China, Bank of America reportedly sold $7.3 billion worth of shares in China Construction Bank. B of A has been trying to raise capital since stress tests here in this country showed it needed some big-time bolstering in case the fallout of the financial crisis gets worse. Japan's third biggest automaker, Nissan, said today it lost nearly $2.5 billion in the fourth quarter. And the country's fifth biggest, Mazda, swung to a $733 million loss in its fiscal year, tanking auto sales the culprit. Asian stocks were mixed today. The Nikkei lost 1.5%. The Hang Seng rose slightly, less than 0.5%. Right now, European markets are up mostly, less than 1%. Mere moments ago, we got word that the European Union will do a stress test of its own on the entire banking system there. They'd like to have it underway by September. Yesterday, the Dow lost about, 1.8%, 155 points. NASDAQ down about 0.5%. S&P 500 down more than 2%. Today, the National Transportation Safety Board kicks off hearings on that deadly February New York plane crash. 50 people were killed when the plane went down just outside Buffalo. The NTSB will look into everything from weather to training and even how rested the pilots were on that day. Ashley Milne-Tite reports.
The NTSB will want to know whether the first officer on the plane was too tired to fly. She arrived on a red eye from the West Coast the same morning as the Buffalo flight. Mark Rosenkerr is acting chairman of the safety board.
Fatigue in general is something which has remained on our most wanted list for much too long, and we are hoping that we can bring a good deal of visibility to the issue if this is something involved here.
The NTSB will also want to know why the aircraft stalled despite an automatic warning the plane was too low. Bob Francis is an airline consultant with Farragut International. He says there's a standard procedure for reacting to that kind of alert.
Any pilot that's got the kind of training that they'd have, to me it's almost inconceivable that when they got into a stall situation that they would pull back on the yoke.
The yoke being the plane's control column. He says the pilot should have pushed down instead. The NTSB says it will be several months before it publishes any conclusions about the cause of the crash. I'm Ashley Milne-Tite for Marketplace.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by CSX, whose trains move a ton of freight 436 miles on 1 gallon of fuel to help reduce fuel consumption. CSX, how tomorrow moves. And by Constant Contact, helping more than 250,000 small businesses and nonprofits succeed using email marketing. ConstantContact.com. American Public Media brings you 4 documentaries about the economic crisis, supported by the University of Virginia's Batten Institute. More at AmericanRadioWorks.org.
When we hear the phrase American dream, we think mostly of a house in the suburbs with a backyard and a garage, but that model's not for everyone. In the first part of Marketplace's special series, The Next American Dream, we take a look at an experiment that includes a different kind of suburban living. It's called co-housing, where sharing common space is a way of life. And a resident of one such development, Kathy Journay, joins us now. Kathy, what are we talking about here?
Well, co-housing has been going on in the United States since the 1970s. The idea behind it is that it's kind of an intentional neighborhood. It is a place where people can live and they want to and expect to interact with their neighbors. You cluster the houses very close together. You reserve the cars to the edges of the community so that the inside of the development is all pedestrian friendly.
It sounds a lot like an apartment complex, but nobody's attached.
It could be, but again, in an apartment complex, most folks only know their neighbors in passing. Conceptually, the idea behind it is you share the resources. Plus, we also have the common house. The common house has a kitchen big enough to cook for the entire neighborhood. We actually have common meals a couple nights a week. There's a kids' room, a yoga studio. We have a sewing room. We have a gym downstairs. And we also have a pool. So rather than the 34 residence building, 34 pools or maybe 12 pools, there's only one pool. So you're not using as many resources. We don't have 34 lawnmowers. We're going to have two neighborhood riding lawnmowers, and that's all the lawnmowers are going to have.
Any problems with sharing?
Well, we're newly moved in. The first residents just moved in December, so there hasn't been any problems with sharing yet. If we do run into problems, we actually make decisions using a consensus model rather than, say, for example, voting. The first rule of co-housing is that you talk to each other if there's a problem. We don't have a lot of rules in the same way that a condo association has rules. In a condo association, often the rules are to take the place of talking to each other. In co-housing, we expect people to talk to each other as the first way to resolve conflicts and problems.
You ever see this concept catching on with mainstream America?
I think in this economy, I think that people are looking for ways to save money. And I think that this is one way that you could go ahead and do that. And I think that as people adapt and change to the new economy, I do think that you will see concepts like this begin to seep into middle America. Yes, I do.
Well, Kathy Journay, good luck, and thanks for being with us this morning.
Thank you for having me.
Hope you can check out more about our Next American Dream series. The website is marketplace.org. In Los Angeles, I'm Steve Chiotakis. Have a great Tuesday.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.